Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear from a CU Boulder math professor whose book, Mathematics for the Environment, will be reissued later this year. After that, an estimated 5.8 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's. The vast majority of them are over the age of 65. But for a small number of people, much younger people, they're living with early onset Alzheimer's. We'll pay a visit to a family in Longmont that's currently dealing with this. We'll have the comment line before we go back to the BBC for headlines, and then it's time for science. And today on How on Earth, we'll be talking about space mining with planetary scientist Dr. Matthew Easley. What are the advantages and disadvantages of getting resources from asteroids, and how technically and economically feasible is it? We'll find out more on How on Earth. Then at 9 o'clock, it is the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Two bills were introduced into committee at the state legislature on Monday aimed at tackling plastic waste. The House Energy and Environment Committee heard testimony for House Bills 1162 and 1163. They would eliminate a type of single-use plastic, expanded polystyrene, often called styrofoam, and it's used in takeout food containers. The other bill would phase out millions of single-use plastic bags and stirrers, and it would institute a straws-upon-request model in food establishments. Representative Lisa Cutter, a Democrat from Jefferson County, one of the sponsors of the bill, says the problem of styrofoam waste is huge in the state of Colorado.
Every day, Coloradans go through 1.2 million styrofoam cups. That's just the cups. There are alternatives. We do not need styrofoam.
This isn't the first time lawmakers have tried to tackle single-use plastic waste, and in particular styrofoam. Last year, a bill was withdrawn during the session that would have removed a state rule that prohibits cities and counties from setting their own standards for takeout containers. Another bill that failed in last year's session would have banned styrofoam takeout containers completely. Also at the state capitol on Monday, LGBTQ activists gathered for the annual Lobby Day. One of the people there to talk to legislators was Dana Zinn, who successfully sued the federal government to be issued a passport recognising their intersex status. Previously, the government would require an applicant to denote gender of either male or female on applications. Zinn told KGNU's Karen Rayforth that they were at the state capitol on Monday to get more legal protections for intersex people.
So yeah, I want to talk to my legislature about getting protections for the intersex people, but we're also want to talk to about the panic defense thing going on in the legislature and see what else they have on the agenda. Well, that's what I'm here for.
State lawmakers are working on a bill that would outlaw gay panic or transgender panic defense being used in criminal cases. The defence sees a victim's sexual orientation or transgender identity being used as a defence argument against them. Representative Leslie Harrod, a Democrat from Denver and one of the sponsors of that bill, said she was appalled to learn that the defence was still admissible in Colorado. House lawmakers heard 13 hours of debate and testimony, very much of it emotional, and it went into the early hours of this morning before giving preliminary approval to Senate Bill 100. That's the measure that would repeal the state's death penalty effective July 1st of this year. The Senate is expected to vote to repeal the death penalty in the state. Denver City Council on Monday failed to get enough votes to overturn Mayor Michael Hancock's veto of a city council measure that had lifted an existing ban on pit bulls in the city. City Council needed 9 votes to overturn Mayor Hancock's veto. Instead, the council voted 8-5 in favour. The Denverite reports that a measure previously approved by City Council would have allowed owners to register their dogs with several restrictions. All dogs are supposed to be registered with the City of Denver, but the bill would have created a special licence just for pit bulls. However, Mayor Michael Hancock vetoed that bill on February 14th. He cited the low registration figures among existing dog owners, as well as the risk of injury posed by pit bull attacks, as reasons for his decision. It was the first bill that Hancock had ever vetoed as mayor of the city of Denver. Broomfield City Council will this evening vote on Resolution 2020-82 that would provide notice of intent to withdraw from participating in the Jefferson Parkway project. That's the highway construction project along the boundary of the former Rocky Flats nuclear weapons site. Activists have been calling on local municipal leaders to withdraw their support for the construction of the road due to concerns about radioactive contamination from the former plutonium production plant. The Jefferson Parkway Public Highway Authority had asked Broomfield for $2.5 million in taxpayer money in 2019 for its procurement process. Broomfield City Council will vote on the measure this evening during their meeting, which starts at 6 p.m. And in the weather today, there is a chance of snow coming in between now and about 3 o'clock today. Highs in the upper 20s, getting close to 30 degrees, and blustery conditions around the Front Range. Tomorrow it will be warmer, highs in the low 40s, with a warming trend getting us into the mid 50s, even to the upper 50s by the end of the week under sunny skies. It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Martin Walter is a mathematics professor at CU Boulder, and he developed an environmental math class that teaches the mathematical fluency that's needed to analyse environmental problems and the critical thinking skills necessary for identifying the faulty assumptions that have led to public misperceptions about environmental conditions and dangers. He spoke about his work recently at a Veterans for Peace meeting. Joe Ritchie was there and brings us this report.
University of Colorado math professor Marty Walter spoke earlier this month on the topic of election security. Walter is best known for his seminal book, Mathematics for the Environment. Published in 2011, it points to many environmental problems that can benefit from mathematical perspectives. So why did the Veterans for Peace chapter in Boulder invite Professor Walter to address the topic of election security? Well, because Mathematics for the Environment is going to a second edition, and it includes Professor Walter's research into quantifiable variables that affect our elections.
In the book, I cover many of the ways that you can mess with elections. Okay, number one, gerrymandering. You all know about it. Okay, there's voter suppression. Number two, tampering with the registration rolls. So you can screw people so they can't even vote because they're not registered, even though they thought they were. You can tamper with the locations of where the polling places are, or how the hours that they're open, or how many machines that are there. The best way to do this is to get elected Secretary of State so that you can mess with elections. And then there's outright electronically enabled election fraud. And I'm not talking about fraud on the part of voters. I'm talking about fraud on the part of the people who run the elections.
Walter described electronically enabled election fraud, and he presented a thumbnail history of the uses and abuses of computational propaganda and psychographic manipulation, a topic he has followed for many years.
Psychographic manipulation. It all goes back to the Behavioral Dynamics Institute before 1990, and a guy named Nigel Oakes. Nigel Oakes founded the BDI, and then in 1993, he founded Strategic Communications Laboratories, or what's known affectionately as the SCL Group, headquartered in London. Because he found out that if you start messing with elections, you can make a lot more money. So get this, in 1993, Nigel Oakes is starting to figure out optimal strategies to use computers to steal elections. 1993.
He went on to describe the use of behavioral and relational data in Obama's victory lab, and in Alexander Nix and Steve Bannon's work identifying the persuadables in Donald Trump's presidential campaign of 2016. In Professor Walter's Mathematics for the Environment, As If Survival Mattered, the section on electronically enabled election fraud cites peer-reviewed articles, along with citations from Edward Snowden's autobiography, Permanent Record, and Brittany Kaiser's memoir, Targeted, the Cambridge Analytica whistleblower inside story of how big data, Trump, and Facebook broke democracy and how it can happen again.
Cambridge Analytica is no more, but it probably has been reconstituted as MERDATA, E-M-E-R-D-A-T-A, or some such. There are now hundreds of corporations trying to be the next Cambridge Analytica to hack an American election.
Marty Walter did some quick math at the close of his talk.
The American elections are easily hacked for $15 to $20 million, which is the main show here.
Mathematics for the Environment, As If Survival Mattered, is forthcoming from Taylor & Francis, CRC. From a snowy night in February, this is Joe Ritchie.
It is 8:15. An estimated 5.8 million Americans of all ages have Alzheimer's, but the vast majority of them are over the age of 65. But for a small number of people, a diagnosis of early onset Alzheimer's can come much sooner in life, and it can be devastating. This is the reality for one family in Longmont, and it prompted Kathy Reginato and her husband David to start a video diary, a YouTube vlog, to chronicle their journey and to inspire others who may be dealing with the same situation.
So this is my very first vlog, and I'm very excited about it. I really would like to have people all over the world to just bounce around ideas. And I would love to share stories. I would love for you to tell me your story. So when I first saw that I was struggling, I had a lot of fog in my head.
Well, yeah. I started that when I knew that I had Alzheimer's. I wanted to have you can help me.
You wanted to be able to have a place for your kids. That's what you were going to say.
Yes.
So I think Kathy was really interested in having something for the kids to be able to go back
right.
and look at.
Yes.
Was one of the main reasons for the vlog. And then
yes.
in addition to that, you really had a heart for people that don't have as much support and family as we do. And she didn't want to feel like anybody was alone. So she really wanted to reach out and connect with other people that might have Alzheimer's. And then in addition to that, especially people that had early onset Alzheimer's,
yeah.
which is much more rare. Only 5% of the people diagnosed with Alzheimer's have early onset Alzheimer's. So that was probably...
Yes.
Then there was one other factor, mm-hmm. which is just the whole stigma and awareness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, take us back to that initial diagnosis, because you're so young, and I think a lot of people associate Alzheimer's with as something that afflicts much older people.
Yes.
Take us back to, was it December 2018? So it's just over a year ago.
Yes. So I'm just going on my merry way, and then bam, my birthday. I didn't know it was horrible. I didn't know what I was doing. I couldn't put words together, and it was so hard.
She
really,
was
really, hard.
Really starting to realize that something was wrong. She was having a lot of confusion and struggling with just everyday things.
What were you thinking at that point when you realized you had an issue?
Yeah, so we probably thought it was menopause. But that was not it. We went to a doctor. a neurologist, and
so to step back a bit, so we knew that something was wrong. We thought at first that it had to do with just menopause, mm-hmm. aging, and a lot of things were similar to people that start getting a little older for the, you know, in your 50s, you start forgetting things for the first time. So initially that's what we attributed it to. Mm-hmm. But then as things progressed and Kathy was having a hard time reading out loud, filling out a check, organizing the family schedule, we definitely knew something was out of the ordinary. We went to a number of different doctors. We had no idea that it was brain or Alzheimer's mm-hmm. associated. Like most people, we thought that was just the farthest thing from our minds. We thought it was some kind of infection. Kathy's has a history of a lot of different urinary tract infections. We thought maybe that had was the root of the problem. Kathy only has one kidney, and so has kind of been chronically going through kidney failure all her life. And so we thought somehow that's where this was all stemming from. Mm-hmm. So, but after exhausting all those different doctors and options, we said, we got to see a neurologist. He quickly determined that something was abnormal and scheduled us to get a spinal tap. And so we went to see mm-hmm. the doctor here in Longmont, a neurologist, and the results were pretty shocking when we came back, because he said there could be three things: inflammation in the spinal fluid, an infection in the spinal fluid, or proteins that are indicators for Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. And that's what ended up being the diagnosis. We then went on to get a second opinion, a bunch of brain memory mapping tests, and pretty certainly determined the Alzheimer's diagnosis.
What went through your mind when you got that? I mean, that is such a shocking diagnosis at your age.
Mm-hmm. It was really, really hard. My kids came over when they got the news, and so they came up. All my kids came, and it was horrible. Everybody was crying. It was just so horrible.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was devastating.
Yeah.
It was not expected. I remember telling Kathy's mom, and her mom saying, "I'm the one that should have Alzheimer's." Her mom's 70, in her late 70s, mm-hmm. not you. And so, and that was our beginning of understanding this whole disease, and that it can affect people as early 30, 40s, 50s. And so that was, how does anybody handle news like that? You don't. It's forced upon you, and you make adjustments the best you can.
Mm-hmm. How old are you, Kathy? Just to
I don't know how many.
You're 53.
53.
So we got the she got the diagnosis when she was 52.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kathy is increasingly finding some things difficult, as we can hear. Dave is on hand to help finish sentences and help find words. Losing the ability to find words is in fact a common part of Alzheimer's. But Kathy says there are many other losses as well.
It is hard for me. I can't drive right now, or probably never. My friends, I have every day, I have something to do. And whether it's my friends or whether I'm exercise and, you know, things like that. So I'm very, and he keeps me on my toes.
But it's really been hard, because Kathy has been so engaged in her community, so engaged with her church community, so engaged with her friends, not being able to drive. She's very social. and then running a family. We have six children. And so we've always been in a busy mode, you know, full lives, let's say. And so having to draw back from that and not be able to, you know, do the grocery shopping, do the cooking, these things have all been big losses for Kath that she's grieved through. We've grieved through together, but it's been hard. As she said, though, we've been trying to keep her very engaged, and she loves all her different activities she goes to, and which is a positive.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people don't have that benefit, but it's been hard. I mean, the hardest thing for me personally is how much Kathy's changed.
In what ways?
Well, it's when you're in a marriage, you argue, you know, your relationship is equal. And so having that shift where Kathy's words are hard, I can't get mad at her because she can't defend herself like before. So it's no fun arguing both sides of the point. So that's changed a lot. And then, you know, on a more personal level, it's hard to not have that individual opposite opinion a lot of times. We're very different. And so I miss that. I mean, it's good for me to have that. And so it feels lonely. It feels like I'm losing her slowly, the Kathy that was. And that part is probably the most difficult.
That's Kathy and Dave Reginato. As we heard, they have six children. The youngest is 14, and it has been really hard on the family. But they're banding together, and they're looking forward to the wedding of one of their daughters at their home in Longmont, which will happen later in the year. Now, you can find Kathy's vlog on YouTube. Look for the channel Forget Me Not Kathy. That's Kathy with an I.
I have the two pills that help me to live. I'm wondering if you are struggling too. So I was really curious about your symptoms and what age you had a diagnosis of Alzheimer's. I would really
Early onset Alzheimer's is relatively rare, but there are definitely, as we've heard, people who are dealing with this. The Alzheimer's Association of Colorado is in the process of starting an early onset support group, and they're planning on having a meet and greet and go from there. They're still working out the details, but we'll give you more details on this because we're going to be following Kathy and Dave's journey, and we'll also be shining a spotlight on many other people and many other families and caregivers dealing with this issue. And there are a lot of resources available, not just for the folks themselves dealing with Alzheimer's, but for caregivers and families. And the Alzheimer's Association of Colorado has a lot of those resources at their website, and that is ALZ.org/CO. They also have a 24-hour helpline, and you can call them anytime if you have any questions. 1-800-272-3900. That's 1-800-272-3900. We'll put photos of Kathy and Dave at their home in Longmont that they kindly invited me in to visit with them. That'll be online at news.kgnu.org, and we'll also put a lot more information about some of the local resources that are available. That's online at news.kgnu.org. It is 8:28. You're listening to KGNU, and it's time now for the comment line.
Good morning. I just wanted to weigh in and give my 2 cents worth on the allegations, which I'm sure are true, of the Russians trying to hack into and alter and influence the, especially the presidential election coming up, but, you know, United States elections this year and in years past. There's been some speculation as to who they're trying to help. Apparently both sides, the Sanders side, Trump side. My observation is this, for what it's worth. the very fact that we're not taking steps right now, and that's because Trump and Vladimir Putin, I guess, are good buddies, to alter the situation is that I don't think the Russians really care who wins. The fact is that they want the United States citizenry to lose faith in their own democratic processes. So that's the point. So whether Bernie wins or Amy Klobuchar or Donald Trump, the very fact that they are interfering, and I believe very much want the American public to know that they are interfering in our elections. There's nothing secretive about it. Part of the operation, in my opinion, from the Russian point of view, is they want to be seen as interfering. Trump will not do anything about it. Hopefully the next president, if it's not him, will.
And that is the comment line. You too can leave a comment if you like to about something that you hear on KGNU. The number to call is 303-447-9911. That's 303-447-9911. And we air the comment line on Tuesday mornings.